You've tuned in to Naturopathy Earth Radio in occult health news, where you get the latest on medical cover-ups, government malfeasance, toxins being put in our food and home, as well as sound, clean eating principles. We are here to cast a light on what the big sick care industry and its government shills don't want you to know. Don't be a slave to Big Pharma. Break free of shackles of Big Food and start your journey now on a long, purposeful life. Become a citizen of Naturopathy Earth. Here's your host, A. Gregory Luna.
Hello, everybody. This is A. Gregory Luna. Of course, you can call me Gregory. Welcome back to another episode of MP Radio and Occult Health News. I hope you're doing well today. As you can tell by the timbre of my voice, it is early in the morning. Before we talk about the benefits of breastfeeding and what breastfeeding does to the long-term health of your child and what the lack of breastfeeding does to the long-term health of your child, the website is naturopathicearth.com, N-A-T-U-R-O-P-A-T-H-I-C, earth.com. Please visit the website. We have some new articles. We have some new food recipes. I did one on chicken salad stuffed avocados, something very keto and paleo. I did that this week. And Irina, my co-contributor, she wrote an article about not all calories being created equal. And of course, there's loads of other food recipes and articles from back in the day. So go check those out. As always, I am a certified paleo-inspired health coach. If you're needing some help with losing weight or maintaining a good optimal life, contact me. I am a published author, at least ebook-wise. You can buy my memoirs, Confessions of an Obese Child, for a paltry, meager $2.99 on Barnes & Noble Nook and Amazon Kindle. So go check that out. And of course, check the podcast called Confessions of an Obese Child. And we have a crowdfunding account through Patreon, so please patronize that account by donating a couple of shekels a month to help defray the cost of this Weber Prize. All right, so let's talk about the breasts and the milk from which ushers forth from the breasts. Why did I bring up this topic? Well, I think, first of all, a lot of you who listen to this podcast stream already are kind of in that mindset, likely that breastfeeding is good for the baby. We had this full pendulum swing, since the beginning of time, we knew that breastfeeding our children was good for us, or at least it was intrinsically wired in us to do it, because honestly, we didn't have formula 4,000 years ago or in 1321 AD or whatnot. But you saw the pendulum swing probably around the 60s, I would say. I mean, we certainly had formula earlier than that, earlier in the 20th century. But with the advent of the Equal Rights Amendment, the feminist movement, the 60s, you saw people like Gloria Steinem and the other radical feminists say that breastfeeding was a way to tie women down. You know, pregnancy in general was a way to tie women down, that women weren't happy being at home and raising their children. And that breast milk was a way that shackled the woman. And therefore, if we had formula, the woman could go work or be independent of the man, the oppressive patriarchal man. And so you saw this swing the other way, backed by fraudulent science that said that, oh, our babies are not affected deleteriously or negatively by breastfeeding or by bottle formula feeding them. And so we went through this fad, and I was a product of this fad. I was born in 1970, and I was in that milieu, or I should say my mama was in that milieu, that period of where breastfeeding wasn't in the zeitgeist. It was more of a kind of a shame to do it almost. And I would say that isn't for the entire country, but it was seen as quite normal and blasé to formula feed. And so you saw that until probably, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that you started seeing the pendulum swing back. Maybe it was all the women who liked to breastfeed in public. I had this interesting discussion. This is kind of, it's not a non sequitur, but because it's on topic, but I had this interesting topic on our discussion with a woman on Facebook, and I don't remember how this came up, but I guess someone was challenging her about the idea of breastfeeding without coverage in a restaurant or, let's say, at a museum. And so then I wrote and I just commented, it's like, look, I'm totally pro breastfeeding. My children were breastfed to a certain extent, to a certain time threshold, normally six months to a year. And I said, I'm totally for it. I just don't understand why certain women, just certain, not all, want to breastfeed at the front of a restaurant with no coverage. And so like my ex-wife and Katie, I know that they both, you know, breastfed, but they would keep it closed, right? You know, you do it publicly, but you just kind of put that strap thing, or you'd have the bra that snaps free, or, you know, whatever, you conceal it. But these women were fighting that was oppressive, and that was like breastfeeding shaming, right? We're all in this fill in the blank shaming, right? Breastfeeding shaming. And they have every right to just breastfeed, boobs out, breasts out in front of the restaurant. And I'm like, it's like, you have every right to do it as long as the restaurant says it's fine, which I'm sure they will because they don't want to get sued. You have every right to do it. But I question, why do you want to do that? Are you some sort of exhibitionist? Because most women, I think, have the common sense to know that, hey, you know, some people might not feel comfortable with this, but I still, of course, have every right and desire to breastfeed my child in public, so I'm going to do it, right? If nature's calling and they're hungry and my breasts are swollen, I'm going to do it, right? So it was just an interesting conversation. So you had this the other side of the spectrum. So it's almost kind of like how radical fascism and radical communism almost come around, and they have certain similarities. Like they both like totalitarian governments, for example, and having a police state. And it's almost like how the radical feminists and the radical pro-nursing almost have things in common, which is intolerance and shoving stuff down our throat. So I want you to understand that I am totally for pro-breastfeeding. I just don't understand why you would want to do it right in front so everyone can see your breasts. So the reason I want to do this is because Kate actually listened to the last episode on the breast surgeries and some of the complications. She sent me an email or text saying how it affects the flow of milk through the ducts into the nipple when you have an implant. So I just thought, well, why don't we do an episode on the benefits of breastfeeding and also talk about what are some of the problems that occur to your child and to you, the mother, if you don't breastfeed. And I want to qualify, of course, that in the event that you did not breastfeed your children, like my mama, this is not any sort of mom shaming, right? We're always shaming, right? Mom shaming. We have cockroach shaming when we kill a cockroach. Oh, you're cockroach shaming. You want to kill the cockroach? I mean, it's not that. It's just, again, this podcast and website's all about just educating people and just giving knowledge. So we're just giving knowledge while I drink my green tea. All right, so let's get to it. I'm going to be gleaning, I should say, from a couple of articles. I have one from the UK, the General Practitioners Infant Feeding Network, and the article is titled Risks of Not Breastfeeding, and this is written by a doctor. And I'm also gleaning from healthychildren.org, powered by pediatricians, trusted by parents, from the American Academy of Pediatrics. Okay, the American Academy. So they know what they're doing here, the American Academy of Pediatrics. So let's go through some of the benefits first of breastfeeding, why you should breastfeed, or what are some of the conveniences behind breastfeeding. Okay, so a lot of these are really obvious, but let's bring it up. So breastfeeding, of course, provides warmth and closeness. It provides that physical contact, that special bond that's created between the baby and the mother. And they've done studies on rats and that are very conclusive that rat pups, which are pretty disgusting when you think about it, but when the rat pups are looking into the eyes of their mother when they're feeding, they develop a closer intimacy. And of course, this makes sense. I remember when my eldest son, Xavier, who I interviewed back 30 episodes ago, he was in the ICU for a few weeks because he was born 34 weeks premature. And even there, the NICU nurses are like, put the baby on your chest, skin to skin. They need that skin to skin contact. They need that eye to eye contact. And so it makes complete sense. If you, the human contact and the eye to eye. And in general, you know, they used to do all those studies on the Romanian orphanage kids back at the end of the Cold War, all these kids who were never nurtured and held, and how they end up being essentially antisocial personality disorder people. So we understand that there's got to be a connection. The human milk has a lot of benefits. First of all, it comes ready to serve. It's always available. You can serve it anytime. You can serve it straight from the breast. You can, of course, freeze it or put it in the refrigerator. I, of course, recommend if you are going to pump it into glass bottles and then refrigerate it. And don't pump into plastic, because we know the issues with all plastics. And I know a lot of women, and this is including the mothers of my children, you know, you would pump and then you would put them into little freezer bags, and the bags you would freeze, right, to be used later on, and you would thaw them out. Now, there, it's of course dangerous to freeze, to put a glass bottle in the freezer, or you shouldn't really do that. So in that case, when you put the milk in plastic, you're going to put it in the freezer. I don't necessarily think that the plastic will be leaching as much in the freezer, given that it's freezing up. So I think that minimizes the interaction and the plasticizer leaching. But what I will definitely say is when you take it out, and I did this, and my ex-wife did this with our eldest child, you know, we would use those bottle warmers, and we would use plastic bottles. And so when you're warming it up, it's tough to warm something up without it putting it in heat, right? Unless you just leave it at room temperature. And some people do that, right? You just pull out the frozen milk in the morning and just throw it in the sink and just let it defrost on its own. That is the preferred alternative. The other option is just get the milk out, open it up, or cut out the plastic and throw it on some stovetop pot or pan and just warm it up that way. What we don't want to do is put plastic in itself with the milk in it in some sort of warmer and warm up the plastic. So we want to try to avoid that in general if we can. And honestly, guys, buy glass bottles. You can get them at Amazon. Yes, they have a better chance of breaking, but they're pretty sturdy. And in the long run, even a little cut that you might get or your child might get, I know you're panicking, your three-month-old child getting a cut, chances are they're not going to get a cut, because you'll notice if they drop the bottle and you'll grab it, and chances are it won't break. But in the long run, it's best to keep those hormone disruptors out of your newborn child's body as much as possible. So yes, invest in glass bottles. But either way, breast milk is available and it's convenient and it's easy. It packs all the nutrients and calories and fluids your baby needs to be healthy. You don't need to augment it. It is nature's super food for a child. It's everything the child needs to grow on its own and grow perfectly. So you don't need to do anything to it. It has all the growth factors that ensure the best development of all your baby's organs. And it minimizes the chances of your child to get ear infections. And we know how much of a pain in the arse ear infections are to children, right? They're crying all night. Best thing to do is just sit them up. That minimizes it. If you can get them to fall asleep sitting up, that's great. And don't make them like stand against the wall. No, you stand against the wall. Minimizes the chance of getting diarrhea, pneumonia, wheezing, bronchiolitis, lessens their chances of getting asthma, for example, and other bacterial and viral infections, including meningitis. Also, the studies show that it protects them from getting, these are some biggies too. It protects them or lessens their chances of getting eczema, which is a skin problem, colitis, which is an intestinal problem, and even some cancers. And probably the most important to you would be SIDS, which is sudden infant death syndromes, and which we'll talk about in a second, obesity and diabetes. So, I mean, these are kind of big things, very big things. So that's one of the reasons that you would want to, that's some of the benefits that your kid would get from it. Okay, so let's talk about some of the benefits that happen to the mother. All Okay, so breastfeeding confers a lot of protections onto the mother. Speaking of, I'm smelling my new scented soy candle. I have to practice what I preach, at least on some things. And I purchased through Amazon, through my links. You know, if you purchase anything, go into the links on the website. Within 24 hours, it can be any purchase you make. I get a small commission at no cost to you. So I bought some scented soy candles. This one is lavender. And I have one that is also basil. And I can smell it. It smells nice. Anyways, why is breastfeeding good for the mother? Okay, so a lot of these things you already know, but some of them you might not know. So it releases hormones in your body that promote mothering behavior. So we know oxytocin, for example, is the bonding hormone. And this is released prior to birth and after birth for several months. Oxytocin's also released quite a bit when you first fall in love. It's the love hormone. It's the bonding hormone, the desire. Seen more in women, I think, for example, spooning after you have sex, right? That kind of skin-on-skin contact. It's the pitter-patter that you feel when you fall in love or infatuation with someone. That's oxytocin. So that's one of the hormones that's released. Also helps return your uterus to size. So, you know, your uterus is normally like the size of a pear, and of course it gets gigantic, and it's an amazing organ when you think about it, how it gets so large, and then it'll go back to normal, normally within 2 weeks, but that's definitely accelerated when you breastfeed. It's almost like the baby sucking on the nipple. Every time the baby sucks on the nipple, just shrinks your uterus just a little quicker. Of course, it helps burn calories, and there's different estimates as to how much you burn a day. Some estimates where I've read will say about 500 calories. I think it differs based on, you know, how often your child is breastfeeding. Tea break there. But that's a definite ancillary benefit. It's going to help you burn calories. It's going to delay the return of your period, which helps keep iron in your body, and iron's important, especially after birthing, because you've lost a lot of blood during the birthing. And, you know, there are a couple big ones. So one of them is it reduces your chances of getting ovarian and breast cancer. Now, this has been well studied. It has been well researched that women who never have children, and I forget the term of it, like non-Paris, I think it has something to do with Paris, but they have a higher rate of breast cancer. It's almost like the breasts were never turned on for their purpose. And guys, if you're listening, the purpose of breasts is not to make your woman look good. It's to breastfeed. I mean, that is the reason why they exist. So it's almost like if they're never turned on, there's a higher rate of you just getting all the lady cancers. So, and then the more children you have, so Kate, you're probably cheering on this one. The more children you have, the more protection it gives you to prevent lady cancers. The other issue that I think a lot of women don't know, and I bring this up, or I used to bring it up in sex ed in my old school, is that it provides contraception for at least 6 months. So you hear sometimes of women who get birth very quickly, or I'm sorry, get pregnant very quickly after giving birth within, let's say, a month or two. Normally when that happens, it's because the woman did not breastfeed or she couldn't breastfeed. And so when you don't promote those breasts from making milk, and the way that happens at the beginning, there's colostrum that comes out, and then you got to essentially stoke the breasts and prime the pump. And if you don't prime the pump, the breasts after the birth will be like, okay, I guess we're not going to make milk. And they just essentially shut down. And so within several weeks of shutting down, you'll start ovulating again. So it is possible, even though the body is not really equipped and it's just like, damn, I just carried a baby for 9 months. I don't want to carry another one this quickly, but it is certainly possible to get pregnant within 2-3 months of giving birth. And so that's why you see like families that have two kids that were born within a year or even a year and a couple of months. So as long as you're breastfeeding, that ceases ovulation, and it'll cease ovulation as long as you are exclusively breastfeeding and as long as you're priming the breasts. And normally up to about 6 months. After 6 months, you might ovulate. But of course, the big giveaway is going to be if you start having your period. But there's always going to be that little window before your first period where you could have ovulated 2 weeks before your first period, let's say in that fifth month, and you could get pregnant. But just know in general that it provides natural contraception. And we like natural contraception. We've talked about all the horrors through the many episodes on this podcast, how the horrors of either the IUD or the Esher or the pill or the patch and all the ones that they've tried to recall and how it screws with your body. So we like things that go with the natural biorhythm of a female's fertile and infertile window. So if you breastfeed, you can take solace knowing that you're not going to get pregnant and it provides natural contraception. So breastfeeding in general is just a natural gift. It leads to better medical and psychological benefits for both the mother and the children. We'll talk about the psychological benefits later, about the attachment issues that children have when they are not breastfeed. But it is a win-win situation for both the mother and the baby. Honestly, too, you save money because you're not having to buy that way, way overpriced formula. And trust me, I know I've had four kids. It's way expensive. It's way it even to the point where I'm just so frugal. Like where if you look at the instructions, like put in three scoops for everybody. I'd put in like two and then mix it up with water because like this formula is expensive. Right, and then you go to the grocery store and you don't know, should I get the store one, the generic, or do I need to get the higher end, like Infamil? And then you have like Jessica Alba's company, Honest Company, that says it's, you know, soy-free and GMO-free. And then she was caught, and you can look this up, 2 years ago, her company, Honest, wasn't so honest when it was caught not using GMO-free ingredients. And so they had to settle out of court, but it could, you know. Like with all companies, they try to minimize the public relations part because they don't want everyone finding out because people are still going to think that their company is good. And then they'll be like, and then they apologize or they'll blame like some provider like, oh, we didn't know, but now we'll do it again. You know, now we'll go GMO free, right? It's all BS. But if you can naturally breastfeed, it's a win-win situation for both the child and for the mother. Okay, so those are all the pros, and certainly I'm sure that I am forgetting some of them. But now we're going to take a little break, and then we'll talk about what are the effects on you and your child if you don't breastfeed. So, you know, when people come up to you like, do you want the good news or the bad news first? Well, that was the good news. And now here comes the bad news if you don't breastfeed. And normally I like the good news first, by the way. Okay, so this article comes from England and it's going to be quoting a lot of Lancet, which is the most prestigious medical journal in the world. It says, findings from epidemiology and biology studies substantiate the fact that the decision not to breastfeed a child has major long-term effects on the health, nutrition, and development of the child and on women's health. Possibly no other health behavior can affect such varied outcomes in the two individuals who are involved, the mother and the child, and that's from Lancet. There are defined differences in various health outcomes between mothers who breastfeed and those who formula feed, as well as differing outcomes on their infants. On a population level, there's an increased risk of various pathologies or diseases affecting both mother and infant, and these are well documented in the literature and exist across all demographics. In general, the health risks associated with not breastfeeding are greatest when there is no breastfeeding at all, with gradually improving outcomes proportional to the duration and exclusivity of breastfeeding. So if you've ever seen the movie Grown-Ups, right? The one where it's Adam Sandler and Chris Rock, and there's that scene where there's a mother who's breastfeeding her child and the kid's still like 4 or 5 years old. Of course, we don't want that, but Well, that's essentially saying the longer you can breastfeed, the benefits it is to both the baby and the child. All right, so risk to the infants. After a million years of evolutionary refinement, human milk differs in composition from other mammalian milks. It is thought that the unique and species-specific immune and nutritional contents of milks have arisen as a result of natural selection, allowing for optimal infant survival. Infants who are not breastfed are at an increased risk of respiratory and gastrointestinal infections. Is it the link between higher rates of acute infection in non-breastfed infants has long been established. The effect appears to be dose-dependent, with those breastfed exclusively and for longer being the most protected. Okay, so we've talked about diarrhea being the most manifest symptom of that, but in just in general, a lot of the GI infections and respiratory infections. We've already talked about this. SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. Breastfeeding is an independently protective factor, with infants who have received no breast milk being at the highest risk of SIDS. And we'll talk about how many babies they estimate have died because of not breastfeeding. Asthma. Infants who are not breastfed may experience higher rate of asthma and childhood wheezing. So if you don't know, asthma, there's smooth muscle that is in the bronchial tree, the tubes that go into the lungs, and those allow your bronchial tubes to get bigger or smaller. So like, for example, when you exercise, they're going to get bigger. So what asthma happens is that something causes those smooth muscles to contract, and so the breathing tubes in your lungs get really small to the point where you can't breathe. And there's different theories as to why asthma has skyrocketed the last 20 or 30 years. Of course, the vaccines are always always accused of it, but it's same for food allergies, right? We don't know. We've had that episode on the link between baby wipes and food allergies and overall asthma. That was around episode 99. So you might want to check that one out. So asthma, breastfeeding asthma. The other one, as I mentioned, type 2 diabetes. Breastfed infants are less likely to develop type 2 diabetes later in their life. That's the adult lifestyle one. And additionally, have been shown to have lower serum insulin concentrations in adulthood, which is great. We want that insulin sensitivity. Obesity, this association is probable, although further studies are needed. The available evidence suggests that breastfeeding is likely to confer some protections against childhood overweight and obesity in high-income countries. The mechanism for this is likely to be multifaceted. Exclusive breastfeeding to 6 months precludes or prevents early introduction of complementary foods. Breast milk contains hormones which help regulate food intake, protein, and total calorie intake are lower in breastfed infants, and higher intake in infancy is associated with obesity later in childhood. So it's interesting that even like when your kids are overeating as babies and infants, I guess it's not so obvious. I guess it shouldn't be so shocking, but yeah, they have a higher rate of obesity later on because I guess they don't know when to stop the intake of food. I know with Olivia, my youngest, and if you don't know this, my youngest is a byproduct of Katie and me. Katie and I have a child, and I post pictures of her all the time on Instagram. So if you're curious to see what she looks like, go to Occult Health News. And she's 17 months now, and she's at this age now where if I give her something she doesn't want, she just literally slaps it out of my hand when I try to feed it to her. Or if I put it on her little table, she'll just grab it and throw it across the kitchen. She is at that stage. But I'm not complaining because she's a beautiful, well-adjusted child, and she looks like little baby Katie. Risks to the mothers. The risks to mothers of not breastfeeding are less well-documented in the literature relative to the risk of infants, the risk to infants. However, evidence is available for multiple short and long-term differences in health outcomes for mothers who breastfeed compared to those who don't. All right, so mothers who don't breastfeed are at an increased risk of postpartum bleeding. The oxytocin release caused by breastfeeding causes uterine contractions, which we've talked about. Women who breastfeed therefore have less postpartum bleeding. Another one is premenopausal breast cancer. Breastfeeding reduces the risk of premenopausal triple negative breast cancer. We already talked about that. Ovarian cancer, women who have breastfed for at least 12 months, which is going to be tough. 12 months is tough. Experience lower rates of ovarian cancer. And ovarian cancer is a silent killer in the female cancers, because typically the symptoms when they manifest, the symptoms of ovarian cancer are kind of vague, and so it could be like abdominal pain, or something like that. And so you just think it's some GI issue. And then once you officially get diagnosed through some sort of diagnostic imaging, you could be like, oh, I got stage 3. Yeah, so it's a problem. Type 2 diabetes after gestational diabetes. So again, women have a higher rate of getting type 2 diabetes, with the greatest risk reduction being amongst women who breastfeed for longest and most exclusively. And we know, women, that when you do get pregnant, you got to get your weight down. If your weight stays up and you give birth to a child, that child has a higher rate of being obese and becoming diabetic. So yeah, like the way you take care of yourself, it's going to affect your baby. So you got to get that weight down. Postpartum depression. Mothers who plan to and then are able to go on to breastfeed have a reduced risk of postpartum depression compared to mothers who plan to and proceed to artificially feed their babies. Additional lactational amenorrhea provides a reduced pregnancy risk and it can improve pregnancy spacing. A lactational amenorrhea is essentially what I've talked about, how it provides you up to 6 months of free contraception. No condoms. I'm sure some of you women are like, having sex, Gregory, is the last thing that's on my mind after a baby just ripped through my reproductive organs. And I get that. Of course I get that. I'm not saying you should be having sex, a week after you gave birth. I think most doctors say 2 months. You got to let it rest down there, for assuming it's vaginal birth. But just know, three, third, fourth, fifth, sixth month, you are getting that protection. Going back to how you what you do to your body while you're pregnant or pre-pregnant affects your child. We've talked about facial symmetry before, and there's studies that show that the toxins that you expose your baby to in utero through what you're eating or what you're breathing in, let's say scented candles, or you live near radiation or like an electrical power plant or the numerous preservatives and food dyes that we're ingesting, affect how your baby's facial bones form. So our mandible and our maxilla, so our mustache bone, our jawbone, our zygoma, our cheekbone, they're all separate bones and they all fuse in the face. And exposure to toxins can throw off how those bones fuse, which leads to your face, the baby's face, ended up looking different than it would genetically look like. So it's very important that if you want to have an attractive child, a lot of that is based, of course, on your genetics and the genetic of the daddy in you. But also it's exposure to toxins. That's why you want to eat clean eating big time. Go back to those episodes 4 and 5 that we did about how you can eat clean and minimize all those toxins, because you are affecting your child's potential beauty through lack of facial symmetry. And none of us have perfect facial symmetry, but you're increasing the chances of facial asymmetry by exposing yourself to toxins. All right, societal and economic impacts. The cost of society of the impact of not breastfeeding is estimated to be $302 billion per year. $302 billion per year. Increasing breastfeeding rates at 4 months to 45% in the UK could save US $29 million due to the protective effects of breastfeeding on childhood disorders. That is crazy. In the Lancet Breastfeeding series published in January 2016 is the largest and furthest reaching research in the effects of breastfeeding. It draws clear and strong conclusions that the scale of not breastfeeding has health and economic costs globally. It estimates that annually around 823,000 deaths of under 5-year-olds and 20,000 annual deaths from breast cancer could be prevented if breastfeeding was upscaled to reflect World Health Organization guidance. 823,000 deaths of under 5-year-olds and 20,000 deaths from breast cancer. That is crazy. Now, some of that is SIDS, but some of it is that the gastrointestinal infections and all the other infections that breastfeeding protects you from to a certain extent. Modeling done by UNICEF, which is a branch of the UN, show that if breastfeeding rates at 4 months were 45% and 75% of babies discharged from neonatal units were breastfed, there could be 53,000 fewer general practitioner consultations annually for gastrointestinal illness, ear infections, and lower respiratory tract infections. The modeling also predicted 9,000 fewer hospital admissions and 361 fewer cases of NEC. So again, this is all about like how much money is saved by you not having to go to the hospital, especially in the UK where they have socialized medicine. The parents necessarily aren't paying for that. It's the government. So the governments talk about like we're spending way too much money on things that can be preventable. And we know that treatment is always more expensive than prevention. There are financial implications for families who formula feeding with infant milks varying in costs of around 1 to 4 pounds per day for a typical infant aged 2 to 3 months. This does not take into account the additional cost of bottles and sterilizing equipment. The impact of this may be felt by low family income families the most, who in the UK are less likely to breastfeed. So that tells you right there, Lancet is saying that poorer families, and this you probably can extrapolate this out to the United States too, poorer families are less likely to breastfeed. And this could be for a variety of factors. Maybe the mother is working more likely than in a wealthier family, and so she can't or doesn't have time, or maybe doesn't think about the wherewithal of just buying a pump and pumping at work, or maybe she works at a job where they look down upon you taking a break to pump. Or on the opposite side of the spectrum, the wealthy people tend to be more educated, and they tend to be more educated even in medical stuff, and so they might know the benefits of breastfeeding. But then again, as a woman, why would you not want to breastfeed if you can breastfeed? Because again, it protects you, it helps you lose weight, it's good for the baby. So like I mentioned, it's a win-win. All right, let's take a break and wrap up. A great compendium to this episode is episode 74, where I talk about the reasons why you might not want to birth your baby C-section, at least as a elective C-section. And I think it's a great compendium because in that episode we talk about babies need to go through the vagina. I know this sounds graphic, but babies need to go through the vagina. They get the mom's microbiome. It crawls into their mouth. The struggling going through the vagina is good for them. And when you take out the baby in a way that's not natural, it takes away a lot of the protective elements that vaginal birthing gives the child. And so I would definitely go back to that episode, especially if you're pregnant or you're planning to get pregnant. And so this episode's kind of the same thing. It's just all about educating you and bringing awareness. So breastfeeding, it's a win-win. Just do it. It helps you. It protects you. It gives you long-term health benefits. It gives you natural contraception. Now, some women, similar to why they like the elective C-section, with the elective C-section, it's like they don't want perhaps their vagina to be stretched out, not to be graphic. And so perhaps women here, a lot of them with breastfeeding don't want to breastfeed because they don't want their breasts to be stretched out, for lack of a better word. And I understand that. Look, I understand that. And of course, the comedy answer would be like, well, you could get a breast job, but it's not something that we would advocate, of course, on this podcast stream. But I just think, you know, that is vain not to call you out if you don't want to breastfeed because you're worried about your breasts losing their beauty. Think about the child. Think about the child. And of course, you can do push-ups. There's a lot of things that naturally make women's breasts look perkier even after they breastfeed. So think about the baby. So you are conferring long-term, lifelong benefits to your child by having them receive your milk, less rates of infection, less rates of attachment issues, less rates of depression. And we didn't really talk about that in this episode, but definitely look it up. There's the children who are breastfed because I think it's kind of assumed or extrapolated out because of the eye-to-eye contact and the bonding with the mom, especially those early ages, that they have less attachment issues. So like, for example, I guess the most practical one is you drop them off at school when they're kindergartners. You're less likely to get the kids all freaking out. But they have less rates of depression when they are breastfed. So And then less rate of them being obese and diabetic. And then look at your own protections, right? The less chance of you getting breast cancer and ovarian cancer, and you get to lose your weight faster, and it provides contraception protection. And just societally speaking, how it benefits the society and hospitals when you can breastfeed, and how it benefits your wallet as well. So if you can breastfeed, breastfeed. Now, some women just can't make the milk, and I don't want those women to feel bad for the fact that they can't do it. It's just something that happens, and don't feel bad about it. And it's understandable why you have to use formula there. But for women who can do it, I would just say don't eschew breast milk. You know, encourage it, get it out of you, feed your baby through the breast milk. It is the perfect food for children and or for the baby. And again, going back to the plastics, if you are going to breast milk, just minimize your interaction with that milk with the plastics, because again, this is a newborn infant and we really don't want to introduce hormone disruptors in their body at such a young age. As it is, they're already getting inundated by the vaccinations and their blood-brain barrier isn't fully formed at that age. And so we want to minimize all the toxins that they're exposed to at such a young age. All right, as always, guys, hit the subscribe button right now, please. These episodes will come directly to you. And as always, post a review for this episode, Confessions of an Obese Child and Kate's Apothecary. Until next time, take care. And next episode is our sesquicentennial 150 episode. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to NPE Radio and Occult Health News. Visit our website at naturopathicearth.com. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Occult Health News and at our Facebook page at Naturopathy Earth. Please consider a donation at patreon.com/naturopathicearth. Consider subscribing to our podcast. And as always, please post an honest review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to this. And remember the core belief at NPE. Let food be thy medicine. Let nature be thy healer. Until next time.